Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hi everyone, I'm Elle Fanning, and these are the movies that changed my life.
Hey everyone, I'm Ian DeBorja, and welcome to IMDb's Movies That Changed My Life, a podcast where your favorite stars break down the films that made them who they are today. This week's guest is Elle Fanning. You may know her from movies like Maleficent, The Neon Demon, or Teen Spirit, but now you can see her as the star and executive producer in Hulu's The Great. Thanks again for listening, and here's Movies That Changed My Life with Elle Fanning. Elle, how is it going this Thursday morning, early morning, late morning, afternoon?
Yeah.
How is it going for you?
It's going great. It's good. I'm in LA. The sun is out. I'm in home at home inside, you know, but doing really good. I'm excited about this.
Like, yeah,
thanks for asking me to be on.
Thank you for coming. I know we just reached out to you just a couple days ago and we were able to squeeze all this in.
You're like, pick some movies. I was like, yeah.
And we will absolutely get to those movies very soon, which I'm very excited to talk about. But before we get there, let's talk about the new show you star in and executive produce, The Great, which has all 10 episodes out right now on Hulu. The show was created by Tony McNamara, who was a co-writer on The Favorite, and is a historical satire drama comedy where you play Catherine the Great alongside the hilarious and often dark Nicholas Hoult as Peter. So talk to us a little bit about that, about how it's, again, like the pseudo-historical drama mixed in with sort of like embellishments to move the story along.
Yes, I think it's a big part of our show that we're not always historically accurate. Tony is obviously, I mean, Tony's done a ton of research on Catherine. And from there, I think he's pulled out the facts and the historical things that really are going to drive our story forward and help us. I think this is, you know, we're not going for the BBC historical version of the show. We want to tell it in a different way and bring it to modern audiences. It's going to be fun and, you know, an escape and exciting and entertaining. And, you know, I think, you know, because sometimes you also can get bogged down in the facts and that's, also just not Tony's style. You know, he has a very specific tone and a very specific style. I think for me, it was important that we got to create our version of Catherine that could be relatable. And someone that I think what was important for me is that I wanted to, for Tony and I, we wanted to create our version of Catherine who can be relatable and still have the essence of what, you know, the historical Catherine did. Obviously I didn't know much about Catherine the Great. Actually, I wasn't taught about her in school. I knew she was the Empress of Russia. I knew that, you know, I knew the horse rumor. Sadly, that was honestly all I knew. Mm-hmm. So I looked up bits and pieces. For sure, I learned that she invented the roller coaster. The real Catherine. Yeah, I think that tells
you. That's a fun fact.
Yeah, it tells you a lot about a person. Like, she sounds like a good time. and then, like, you know, her period was the Enlightenment period. She's the longest woman ruler of Russia. And she brought female education and art and science. And all of that is included in our show. It's just not mm-hmm. done in your typical classic period way.
You really get a good sense of what the show is going to be throughout the first episode. So I highly, highly recommend it. Any last things on The Great before we move on here?
Other than
watch this great show?
Watch it, please. Yeah, I think you'll have such a good time. And she's such a unique character. I think what was important to me is that she's, because I'm kind of allergic to the strong female character term, mm-hmm. like hearing uh-huh. strong female character. I'm like, what does that mean? Like, sure. you know, like that's, you know, I think Catherine, I really was aware that I wanted to make her, to humanize her and make her have, you know, she makes mistakes. Sometimes she wavers. Sometimes she's weak. Sometimes she's incredibly brave, but it's going to be unexpected, you know? And I think there's room for that. And TV has really forged that path to have those complicated women characters, you know, with Fleabag and Russian Doll and Killing Eve, you know, et cetera. So I hope that fits in.
Yes. I think it will. Again, big fan. All right. So before we get into the movies that changed your life, we were talking a little bit before we started about The Nightingale. Yeah. So this is a movie that you were going to do along with your sister.
Yes.
So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, it's based on a book called The Nightingale, which is a bestseller. It's a World War II story about sisters. My sister and I, we've never worked together. I started my career playing her at a younger age. I was in I Am Sam. I was 2 and I just had to swing on a swing with Sean Penn and lay in the grass and pretend to sleep. So I played her, but we've never been on screen together, talking, acting together, never. So we've always been looking for a project where that could happen. And we finally found one. Melanie Laurent is going to direct it.
Oh, she's directing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I have done a movie with her too.
Uh-huh.
Called Galveston that, in her first movie she did was a French film called Respire, Breathe. And it's, if you haven't seen it, it's,
I haven't. Okay. I'll
you've got list. To. Oh my God. She's incredible. She's not in it. She's just directing it, but it's the movie's incredible. Okay. She's directing this and, we were about to go before the quarantine, the shutdown mm-hmm. happened. So hopefully after this is done, that will be the first project we'll do.
It's funny when you said Nightingale's based on a book about two sisters. I'm pretty sure my wife's book club read that. I'm pretty sure I'm like looking at it right now over like on our bookshelf. I can see it over there.
Probably.
So they will be very excited about that when they hear about it.
You can let her know.
Awesome. All right. So, movies that changed Elle Fanning's life. Where do you want to go first?
It sounds so huge, like that statement, right? I guess we should start. I think we should start with probably the first one that I saw.
Okay.
Which was Neverending Story out of the group.
So this is 1984's The Neverending Story. It's a 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb with 126,000 ratings. Written and directed by Wolfgang Peterson, starring Barrett Oliver, Noah Hathaway. The synopsis on IMDb, which is a very surface level, a troubled boy dives into a wondrous fantasy world through the pages of a mysterious book. It is a childhood and 80s classic. So set the scene for us, Elle. When was the first time you watched this?
Okay, so it's really, this is actually an interesting story. I was filming Door in the Floor. So I was 4 years old, because I turned 5 on that set. So I was around 4 or 5. And Bijou Phillips was in that movie, and she played my nanny in the movie. We were like really, like she loved me. Like we would like hang out on the set and like do things together. Nanny me, you know, kind of, whatever. Sure. And so I went over to her apartment, which I think she was dating John Lennon's son at the time. I think it was like
Sean.
Yeah, I think it was like his apartment, and John Lennon's piano was there. I remember this because I mean, I was so young. This wouldn't have, I wouldn't have cared. But my grandmother dropped me off, and like my grandmother knew, and like she would tell me, like when I got older, she was like, "Do you realize like where you were? The piano, like what it was." I was like, "I didn't know," but we made macaroni and cheese.
Okay.
Like. Unbelievable. She made the, like, I remember this. It was so good. So crunchy on top, so creamy in the middle. So good. And she turned on Never Ending Story, and I'd never seen it before. And I was so scared. Like, it affected me. I was terrified. And I sobbed and sobbed when the horse died, when the horse went into the quicksand, right?
Yes.
Yeah. The quicksand or the mud or something. Yeah.
Yeah. The swamps of sadness.
Swamps of sadness. Yeah. When the horse drowns and goes, I mean, I was like a wreck, and it just like, I remember that image always. And like, we were sitting on the couch, and she had thought she'd like traumatized me because it affected me so much, but it's, and it's funny because like, I really just remember that moment. And then of course I've watched the movie many times after that, just to like figure it out why it affected me so much. Mm-hmm. And it still kind of does, like it still, but it brings me back to my like youth, like what, I don't know what really got to me. And it just got to me, that whole story. Just, I don't know.
Yeah. I rewatched it, ahead of this, and the Artex, the horse dying in the swamp scene was like, when I was watching, I mean, it is brutal.
Artex, you're sinking! Come on! Turn around! You have to now! Come on! Artex! Fighting against the sadness, Artex!
Like, Artex!
I know! And it's for kids! It's for, like, it's a kid's movie. But I think I like that. I mean, I also love, like, visual effects that are, like, real.
Like, practical effects.
Yeah, there we go. Mm-hmm. Practical effects. Like, I'm very partial to that. Like, I feel like, why don't we do that now? Like, I want that again. Like, I love, like, Labyrinth, like, all the, you know, Wizard of Oz. Like, I like, I love the look. I'm like, I love all the puppets and all that.
Yeah, and the puppet, the creatures in the Neverending Story are amazing. And it's funny, because, like, the first 10 minutes of the movie, right, it's just a normal movie. And then once he opens up the book, it goes, like, 100 miles an hour. They're like, all right, enough with this real world stuff. Let's get to this weird guy riding like a racing snail and like a guy hanging on a bat. I mean, it's so funny. Do you have like any favorite like creatures you liked from it, or any specific characters from the movie who stood out to you stand out to you?
Well,
still?
I think you have to like Falcor, right? The dragon. We have a dog that looks like a lot like him. So sweet. I mean, I also really like the childlike princess.
The moon child.
She was literally the most, like, I thought she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. When I was like, she is the most beautiful person like in the world. I think I just love the feeling of the film, like more than specific moments. It's just like such an escape. It just takes me to this other place.
Yeah.
And that's I think it's so, it's like also like the acting really isn't like good. Like, so you're like, I'm not watching this for the acting here. You know what I mean? I'm watching this for like to be able to daydream and imagine. And like, what's funny, I wasn't like, my family's all sports families. Uh-huh. So I wasn't really not allowed, but we never went to the movie theater growing up. Like, we would not go see movies. So I was, when you asked me about this, I was trying to think of what was even the first movie like that I saw in a theater. I think it was Finding Nemo. Like, I think that's what it was actually, but that didn't affect me. Like at the same, you know, I think there's something about being alone, like in your room or like watching, putting the TV on in the living room, your parents, like, and you're just alone and like experiencing it with your TV set. Like, and that's what I remember with this film. It's like, experiencing that by myself, and like those were my secret thoughts. Like, I don't know, like it was like all for me, you know, with that film specifically. And I just didn't know that films could like look like that. I didn't know, because I'd watched like Disney movies and, you know, those are out there, but this just is a different look. It's so dark.
It's funny. It's so and like, dark. You know, the Falkor that they use in the movie is 43 feet long, constructed of used airplane steel.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it was a real thing that Atreyu and Bastion, first of all, actually, do you know Bastion's full name? The kid in New York?
No.
So his name is Bastion Balthazar Bux.
Wow. I mean, the names are insane. What is it at the end? He has to say the name at the end, right?
He has to change.
But like, he has to change the name. But it's like, what is the name? Because then what he like screams and then he goes back. It's like, that was always so confusing to me.
Yeah, it's funny because like a note I had too is that like for most of the movie, it's like, it's very like whimsical. It's a dark, obviously like a darker fantasy. But then all of a sudden it gets like very, very, very deep and intense. Like there's when Atreyu meets the wolf at the end, I wrote down two lines. The wolf says, Atreyu asks like, why are you doing this? Why are you trying to destroy Fantasia, the world they're from? Uh-huh. And the wolf goes, because people who have no hopes are easy to control. And whoever has control has the power. I'm like, what kid hears that? And they're like, oh, like, you know, it's the sort of thing where you watch it now. Yeah. Like you watch it now. Yeah. It's funny. So I get, you know, and obviously like, Bastion's character, he's alone, needs to escape. I mean, it's cool. There's like a lot of really fun, deep themes in there.
That then isn't the boy in the beginning who's reading the book, he's kind of bullied, right? Yes.
He gets thrown in a trash can.
Yeah, he gets thrown in the trash can. I remember that. And then he like goes and he's kind of feeling alone. He's like loner, same way, relating to the story.
It's funny that, you know, Neverending Story is on your list because the first thing I thought of is that you play Aurora in the Maleficent series. So you do dabble in like the dark fantasy specifically. I mean, Maleficent is, especially in terms of Disney, it's very much on the dark fantasy side. Did that ever like cross your mind at all where you were filming at all? Where you're like, hey, I'm kind of like in my own Neverending Story right now.
I don't know. I don't know if it like, if that specifically crossed my mind, but I think that I was aware that I was in a fantasy world. I mean, on those sets, a lot of it is green screen.
Right.
But then there are like some tangible things. I remember in the first one, we did have not like puppets, but there was like cardboard cutouts that we could look at and they were really,
For reference.
Yeah. And showing us what the creatures looked like and that. And I think there is a real side to me that's like very interested in the fantasy, like I do feel that it just seems like endless possibilities. I like the idea that I can create a creature. It can look like anything. It can do anything, you know. I think that's the world of movies is like, sometimes I think people get too bogged down in making movies too realistic and like, oh, it just needs to look real. And it's like, well, yeah, but we live in life. We know what life looks like. Sometimes we just need to watch something that's like, whoa, like really stretches our imagination, you know? So I like that feeling. So I think on set, it's like for those Maleficent films, you're constantly using your imagination, like in a crazy way. And sometimes you look at yourself, you're like, I look insane. Like I'm like, you know, just like talking to myself with imaginary fairies, like doing things. And you're like, wow, my job's so funny. But it was fun. I mean, I was a big fan of the Disney princesses and all of that growing up. So it was a big dream. That was a big deal when I like got the call.
Yeah. Who wouldn't, right? That's a dream for anyone. Oh, even if you're not an actor, you're not, you don't want to be in the film industry. If someone just called you like, hey, do you want to be a Disney prince or princess?
Like 100%. I was like, with Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, with Angelina Jolie.
Any man would do this.
It's anyway. A win for everyone.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yes, the Neverending Story. My last question on this before we move on to our next film. Yeah. How great is the theme song?
So good. I mean, I have that on my phone, like, you know, like the Neverending Story. There's one director, we would play that. I don't know if it might have been Nick Reffin. He was on.
Really? Yeah. Nick Reffin. I would not guess that.
I mean, I might be saying that wrong, but that's what my gut is telling me because he played music all the time. And I think like I was humming it one day, you know, something like that.
Right.
He's like, let's put it on. And like, we played it.
So that's a fun fact.
Yeah, fun fact.
Nick Reffin and Elle Fanning listened to Neverending Story on the set of The Neon Demon, the last place you would expect that to come up.
Exactly.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
All right, so let's move on to your next movie, which I believe would be Grease then.
Yeah, is this correct? Yeah, that makes sense.
So Grease came out in 1978, 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb with 226,000 ratings, directed by Randall Kleiser, written by Jim Jacobs and Warren Casey, did the original musical, and then the screenplay was Bronte Woodard and Alan Carr, starring the immortal Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta, among many other people. One of my favorite movies, I can't even tell you how many times I've seen this,
Set
the scene for us. Do you know the first time you saw it, or was it just someone
I don't even know. It's always been a part of my life, this movie. I think if you asked any of my family members, like any of my friends, like they would say Grease is my favorite movie because I just watched it constantly. I wanted to put it on constantly. It was like, I would watch it over and over and over again. And I would dress up as Sandy. So I had like a costume box that was like, okay, we're watching the movie. Like I have the specific costumes and I would like pause, put everything on for each different scene that she was in and perform it word for word, like the songs, the lines, everything, like while watching the movie. And then we had a pool outside at our old like childhood home and I would go for Hopelessly Devoted. I would get a pink piece of
journal paper,
and I would go out to the pool in like a nightie and do that. That was like one of my favorite things to play was like that scene outside. I would do that and I would spray the Marty yes. Sprays perfume on it too before they go out. Like a little spritz, and I was like because she's like. She's doing love letters to her. I know like everything. Love letters to her her boyfriend who's like serving. And
you're going with a Marine?
I know. Yeah, exactly. God.
Yeah, I mean, everything, it's funny, like, it seems like you and I have a very similar relationship with this movie. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the first time I saw it, but my mom definitely bought me the soundtrack when I was, like, in second or third grade and always listened to it on repeat. I just thought John Travolta, Danny Zuko was the coolest guy.
I know.
I mean, the way, like, it's funny, I rewatched it again for the millionth time, and, like, I will never get over the fact the way John Travolta walks and talks like in this movie. Like he has so much, it's so ridiculously over
it's
the top.
It's such a choice. Like, it's like, whoa, like, but it works. It's like, wow, you're going there. You're really going there. And it just works. I mean, he was my first crush. 100%. Not John Travolta, like Danny Zuko.
Yeah, Danny Zuko.
Yeah.
There are so many quotable lines in this movie, especially from like, I mean, everyone, but Danny, like the note I wrote down, and it's funny, like in my house with my wife, like we always quote Grease back and forth to each other. Like, you know, I'll say, oh, what's the matter with me, babe? What's the matter with you? And like all these like goofy Travolta-isms.
Yeah.
Do you have any like particular lines that like stick out to you or anything like that?
I always think of but I don't know who exactly, the hickey from Kinnicky. I always remember because I was like, when I was young, I was like, what? I didn't know what that was. I was like, I didn't know at all. And then And then also the scene when the whole scene of like her in the car and like the condom, like all that, my mom would fast forward. I wasn't allowed to watch that part. And then also, and so then when I watched it, like when I was like older, I was like, I'm like finally able to like watch what was going on. But like how funny also like some of those lines were, like when she goes to the bathroom, she says she skipped her period.
She said, I missed my period. She's like, oh, you're skipping class already? Or something like that.
It's like something about a sentence. And Marty's like, what? Or something. She's like, I skipped my period. Like it's screaming. Yeah. Oh, and I was like, but yeah, I would always try to like sneak and watch. And like my mom would always fast forward those things. I feel, oh my God, what other... The whole, when he's like after the bonfire and he's like rocking and rolling.
Rolling and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, Sandy.
Yeah.
Hey, Snowball. I got a surprise for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Sandy!
Danny?
What are you doing here? I thought you were going back to Australia.
We had a change of plans.
I can't. Well, that's cool, baby. I mean, you know how it is. Rocking and rolling and whatnot.
Danny?
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
Yeah. He is so good in it.
He's so good.
Oh, my God. And then the drive-in scene, I also never really understood. See, this is because I was too young. Like, I didn't understand the whole, like, when she screams and when she gets out of the car and she shuts the door on his erection.
Yeah, and he's like, oh.
Yeah, and I was like, why is he like, I was like, what happened? Like, what happened? And now watching it later, I'm like, there's so many like innuendos. It's very sexual, the movie.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, the movie seems to have like two relationships with it. It's like when they see it as a kid and like they love all these songs and the dancing. Yes. And then like when you know, probably high school or something like that, when you start realizing all the things, like another thing I never realized when I was younger is when she was saying like, I'm late on her period. So similar to that, like she says that to Kanicki, like, I'm late. I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Like, she's late. What is she late for?
Yeah, I know. And then you watch it, like, because I've watched it so many different ages in my life.
Yeah.
And then it starts to mean something else. Then it's kind of like a flirty thing and like this very sexy thing. And I mean, it's also like not the best like thing to teach girls. Like, you know what I mean? Of like, all right, just change for the guy and then he'll like you. Completely change yourself. But I do think the whole bad boy thing, like because of that movie, was something that I was after, like in high school. And I wanted to be that. Like I wanted that experience. I really did.
It's funny. A lot of people, when they think of what high school is going to be when you're, you know, young, like in middle school or elementary school, like a lot of people go to like the John Hughes and a lot of people go to like the, you know, the Never Been Kissed and Things They Hate About You. But for me, I thought everything was like Grease.
Me too.
Like, I thought high school was going to be like that.
I've seen them.
Me too.
Yeah. But it was just something that like, I just related so much to that. I also think, which I would normally never say this, but I think this is a rare occasion. I don't think this movie can ever be like redone in the way it's like, no, it just can't be touched. Yeah. But I think that they were like, the actors were so much older than their characters. But weirdly, this is the one time that I would say that it's okay. Like I would make an exception. Like they seem totally fine, but they're like 30. Like they're super old.
Minimum. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. For these parts. But I don't care. I like it. Like, I like it.
Especially, what's his name? Craterface, with the Scorpions, like the rival gang. That guy, I'm like, you're not in high school. You're not in college.
No, I know. Oh, yeah, she's, in Cha-Cha.
Cha-Cha.
Yeah. She looks pretty old, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're
not in high school.
It works, right? But I mean, it's just like there's this some sort of like nostalgia with it where you're watching it and you excuse all these things that, like, you know, if they had made, if they made Booksmart or like Superbad with people that much older, it would have been like, what are you doing?
I know, but we excuse it. Like, it just works. The humor, it's just, that can never be captured. Like, there's something like the chemistry with everyone on the set that's like so real. Like, again, we're saying like the real thing, but it is like they've created something that's like you want to be in. Like, I want to be there. I want to be there. Except for one thing, the one scene that I hate.
Okay.
Beauty School Dropout. I do not like Beauty School Dropout. That was boring. I always thought it was so boring growing up.
Too much of a departure.
Just too much. I was like, what? And then he's like flirting with her, the guy. I'm like,
although I always like Rizzo in that scene is so funny though, because she's wearing they're like tin foil and like the smocks and stuff like that. Yes. She's kind of like looking at her, but the way she's not singing like she's like one of the other beauty school angels. She's singing like she's still Rizzo and like, ugh, like I don't really want to be here. That's so funny.
Everyone's so in their character. They just got it down so well.
I mean, why do you think this movie is going to be immortal? Like, I don't think this movie's ever going to leave any sort of place in pop culture.
No, it's completely immortal. And like my kids, I will be showing that to my kids. Like, it's just weird. It's like, it just like stands the test of time. I think the songs are amazing. Like the songs are so good. There's too many, too many quotable lines and like quotable scenes that are just little moments that are just iconic. Like it's just completely iconic. I don't know. They just captured something. They were lucky. They just did it. They did it.
So there is this, before we go to the last movie, I was doing some research and there is this very dark fan theory I want to send your way to see what you think.
Oh my gosh, that's exciting.
So there's a fan theory that the reason the car flies away at the end of the movie, which is completely insane, is because...
Wait, I think I've read this.
So in Summer Lovin', Danny says... he saved her from drowning. He saved Sandy from drowning.
Oh my God, yes.
So there's a fan theory that it's all a dream, that it's all her coma dream, which is like so funny. What do you think about that?
I mean, I don't think that. I don't think that's what it is. Like, no, but I like the idea of that. I like the idea, but it's definitely no. That's not what it is. Sorry.
I agree with you on there, but it's funny to think about that.
That is hilarious. No, then we should do the sequel where she wakes up.
And then it's really what happens. Yeah. And it's like a very dark, like 28 days later sort of thing. Like everyone's graduated. She doesn't know where she is.
Oh my God.
Okay. So you're an executive producer now. Okay. So this is how we get the ball rolling. This is Grease 3 where she wakes up from the coma.
Let's get it going. Let's go. And then it's like in this contagion world. She like wakes up to Matt Damon. He's like, we got to get you out of here.
this is writing itself. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad we have this on audio. I hope you're enjoying this week's episode of Movies That Changed My Life. If you are, don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure that you get all of our upcoming episodes as soon as they are available, because we have some awesome guests coming up to talk about equally awesome movies like Judy Greer on Casablanca, Felicia Day on Bringing Up Baby, and Kevin Smith on Reservoir Dogs. Thanks again for listening. Be sure to check out imdb.com/podcasts for more content. Now let's get back to Movies That Changed My Life with Elle Fanning. Your final pick is The Virgin Suicides. This is a 1999 indie classic, 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb, 139,000 ratings, directed by the amazing Sofia Coppola. The book it was based off was written by Jeffrey Eugenides. It was the screenplay written by Sofia Coppola, starring Kirsten Dunst, Josh Hartnett, James Woods, Giovanni Ribisi does the voiceover, among many other people. Kathleen Turner, who was absolutely fantastic, AJ Cook, Anna Hall. So the synopsis of this says, a group of male friends become obsessed with five mysterious sisters who are sheltered by their strict religious parents in a suburban Detroit in the mid-1970s. Set the scene on this one, The Virgin Suicides. When was the first time you saw this?
So the first time I saw it was actually, it was after I had actually already worked with Sophia, because I worked with Sophia on Somewhere when I was 11. I was in that. And I had seen Marie Antoinette at that point, actually. And then I was 13, like in my teens, like also wanted to see more Sofia Coppola films after I'd worked with her. I need to watch it. Like I need to see it. And it just completely like changed my life. The aesthetic of it. I was like, I want my teenage years to look like this, you know, be like that. I could relate so much to the dreamlike quality of kind of youth and the mystery. I was like, it just spoke to me. And then when Instagram came out, my first, which is, I don't have it anymore, but my first handle on Instagram I got was Virgin Suicides. I got
no
that.
Way.
Yes. Yep. So I was Virgin Suicides for a really long time. All through high school, that was my Instagram.
Huh.
Yeah.
Did people ask like what that was? Cause that's still like, a, I mean, even pretty
kids
niche,
would.
Right?
People, kids totally. Yeah. They didn't know. Not yeah. They didn't know. And they were just like, ew, like, what do you mean? Like, they just thought it was like weird, you know? Like,
yeah. 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 Like super emo sort of thing. Right.
Yes. I'm like, yeah. No, it's actually a really cool movie. But I just wanted to be Elizabeth's sister. I wanted to be them. But I'm like, it's such a tragic end and
it's such a
tragedy.
Right.
But just the way Sophia, obviously that was her first film.
Yep.
But she, from that moment, like that was her first movie, but it's such a Sofia Coppola film. It's like her aesthetic, her stamp on it. You can just see it.
She has such like amazing style. Throughout, I mean, obviously in all her movies, but you see it right away in The Virgin Suicides, like, you know, the colors of the film, like there's like a yellow and blue hues and like the film grain and even like the angles they use. Like a note I had was that, if you didn't know any of the actors or when this was made, you would think this movie was shot in the 70s.
100%. I just watched it, recently because it was the 20th anniversary, like a couple weeks ago. And so I watched it again just on that day to celebrate it. And I was thinking about that. I was like, how does she make it look so 70s? Like it's completely 70s. Like just the lighting and just everything, even down to like, and I know how specific, like the girl's hair color and like the way the girl's hair falls is a very 70s way that people just looked a certain way back then. And Sophia got it. Like they all look that way. When you look at old photos, it's like, it's remarkable.
My note is that Kathleen Turner, who is Mrs. Lisbon, the mom of the Lisbon sisters, she kind of looks like a 70s horror mom a little bit. Like I could see her in like a Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. Like in Carrie or something.
Yeah. Another thing is like the, when they do like the music montage, they do like split screen, which you don't see anymore really.
And
they
the double exposure.
Yes.
Right. Like tons of that. I love that when it's like the girls in the grass or like, you know, little things.
Something I pulled out of this, I haven't seen this in a couple of years. And I'm curious if you think the similar way that I do, that it's really interesting that Sofia Coppola tells the story of these five Lisbon sisters. But the whole story is told from the perspective of men.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Right? So, like, you know, a lot of it is about how Josh, obviously the narration by Giovanni Ribisi is told from the perspective of boys. And then as they're growing older, Josh Hartnett's perspective, they're interviewing him in, like, the AA thing.
Yeah.
So I think it's really interesting that they do that because particularly at the end, you know, the voiceover says, you know, the girls weren't hearing us calling to their rooms. We were trying to help them. But it was like, no, they were calling for you to come help them. Like, you know, the boys were sort of like not seeing where all the signs were. And I thought that was really interesting, especially when the girls are ordering magazines to their house to like see the outside world.
Yeah.
And then the boys start doing it too. But the boys are using it to like, oh, we're going to go on a trip with the Lisbon sisters, when the girls were doing it to like escape from themselves. Mm-hmm. Right? It's really interesting that she does that. I thought that was really, really cool. And I really had never noticed that before.
I find that really interesting too. I think cause it's just the enigma of how males look at women and like how it's just, the enigma of them and also not fully understanding too completely what they're actually going through, you know? And they're wanting to, I feel like the boys want to romanticize it.
People saw their clairvoyance in the wiped out elms, the harsh sunlight, and the continuing decline of our auto industry. Even then, as teenagers, we tried to put the pieces together. We still can't. Now, whenever we run into each other at business lunches or cocktail parties, we find ourselves in the corner going over the evidence one more time. All to understand those five girls.
Like, they have romanticized this as this legend of these girls, these blonde and the slow-mo and, like, the mystery of that. But, like, as a girl, when I watch it, I don't see the girls in that way. Like, it's very relatable to me. Like, that it's, oh, they put this on them, but actually what they're really going through, you know, is heavy stuff. And I think what I love that this was a film that, like, as a teenage girl, I could watch it. I felt sophisticated watching it. I felt not talked down to. I felt like, and I think Sophia kind of found that area that, I don't know, was missing. I don't know if, like, I guess it wasn't really, I think it's become a cult classic, like, over, I don't know if it, when it came out, if people really, I know it was a big hit in Cannes, but then it, like, kind of, people didn't like it.
Yeah, it had a budget of $9 million. The worldwide gross was $10 million, so just a little bit over the budget. But yeah, I mean, I think it's like, it's a really heavy movie, especially at the time. Like 1999, we're talking, like, again, the 10th, like, if it's a teenage film, it's about 10 Things I Hate About You, and Never Been Kissed, and these really cute, you know, She's All That, really cute high school dramas, and this is just like high school rom-coms. This completely
against
the grain.
And she also put Kirsten Dunst in it, who was like the star of all of those movies, you know?
So there's a, it's funny, like Josh Hartnett plays Trip Fontaine, which is a great character name.
The best name ever.
So he does this, Halloween, H2O, and The Faculty. And then Kirsten Dunst does, she was already, you know, relatively famous at this point, but she does The Virgin Suicides and then goes on to Bring It On, Crazy Beautiful, and Spider-Man. So it's like Sophia like kind of grabbed them right at the point where they're like launching their careers. Yes. And it hits like perfectly for the role. It's funny how things like that work out.
Yeah. And I think because Kirsten had told me that Sophia, when they did Virgin Suicides, or I think during Spider-Man or something, they wanted to like fix her teeth. And she said this in interviews. I'm not like speaking out of turn, but she's like, I'm like telling her secrets. But she said that Sophia was the person who said, do not fix your teeth. Like, don't, like, don't fix your teeth. I thought that was like,
that's great
advice. Yeah.
So I want to wrap this in. So obviously Sofia Coppola directed Marie Antoinette. And when I watched The Great, obviously, I had Marie Antoinette vibes coming out of there. And when I saw you had picked this, I was like, well, 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 here we come full circle.
Well.
So is that something that attracted you to the project as well? Like, or was it when you're seeing, you're like, oh, this is sort of like, you know, Marie Antoinette was very early in terms of doing like the hip historical sort of film, right? Parody, almost film, sort of like stylizing the historical past. And The Great does that really, really well also. Did that cross your mind when you were in the executive producer's chair or when you're reading it, you kind of saw all this coming together?
Yeah, it was something that we had talked about because, I mean, you can definitely see, you know, the comparisons of that or like Barry Lyndon or Dangerous Liaisons or, you know, just like the period drama turned upside down a little bit.
Right.
I don't think we didn't want to copy anything, but I think I was happy that, you know, movies like that and like The Favorite have happened because it's kind of now we get to do a TV show in this genre, which I don't think if movies like that had happened that they would allow us to do a show, you know, like, and so we can explore it even further. So yeah, definitely.
Have you had a chance to talk to Sophia about The Virgin Suicides?
I have. I have. Yeah. And she actually, for my 16th birthday, gave me a print of the girls. There's like one of the famous, many famous photos, but the girls, they're all on their bed, like lounging on their bed. It's like a vertical
photo.
She gave me that print and like signed it. And so I have that. It was like, oh, 'cause she knew that I, like was such a nerd about Virgin Suicides and loved it so much. So
amazing. Amazing. Cool. Well, Elle, we got to talk about three awesome movies, The Neverending Story, Grease, and The Virgin Suicides.
All in a 7-point rank, like 7.2, like on IMDb.
Yeah. Right Love around that. There. Yeah. Which is great. Fantastic. Yeah. So before we wrap here though, do you see any through line between the three movies at all as to why you think they all stuck with you?
Huh? It's interesting. I think I tried to pick like films that were truthful to like that. Okay. I do feel like these kind of shaped the way that I look at the world, like in my childhood, that these are the three ones that made an impact on that. And I think have honestly, like specifically Grease and Virgin Suicides that like really, I try to emulate those movies. Like I try to manifest those things to happen in my life, like just to maybe look that way or, you know, get that guy or have that, you know, high school. So like those are two very impactful ones. I think Neverending Story I'm a big like daydreamer like type uh-huh. person, so I think it just expanded that imagination for me. I know it's interesting. I mean, Greece and Neverending Story. There's some like fantasy, like fantastical things, and I think in Virgin Suicides, they're all kind of fantasy.
Yeah, actually. They all have like the sort of whimsy.
Yeah, because Virgin Suicide, you could look as like a big old giant dream, fantasy like, and then obviously Neverending Story, and Greece is we know it was truly a dream.
Yes, as we've discussed here, it is for Grease 3, yes, that is where it's going to be. This was an awesome chat. I'm glad we got to bond over these three movies.
Me too. That was so fun. Loved yes. it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Stay safe out there, and hopefully we get to see The Nightingale and some other projects as well soon.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to like it, rate it, review it, share it. All of the above. And if you want more information about Elle and her picks, head over to imdb.com/podcasts.